So did you want me to? Okay, got it. All right, it's 4:02 and I'd like to call the August 10th Environmental Services Advisory Committee meeting to order. All right, let's do roll call. Let's see, all right. Fred Ariza, here.
Here.
Brian Thomas.
Here.
Mike Harrier.
Here.
Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
Susan Shippers. And Susanna. She just probably hasn't hooked up yet. And Elvira Suarez Din, she's here.
Here.
And we've got Maggie here and also Carlos. So I think we're got a pretty full house.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. All right. So for chairperson's report, essentially I'm just gonna say, you know, if you know anybody that would like to be on ESAC, take them out for a beer and try to talk them into it, okay? So it'd be nice not to have more than just seven. That's kind of sad these days. All right, let's move on. Item three, director's report. Hi, Carlos. You've got Bifusion and the HHW program for us.
Okay, good afternoon. So we provided as part of the agenda materials a copy of the Mayor and Council communication memo that essentially outlines the parameters of the Bifusion agreement. Along those lines was also the resolution and the actual agreement with Bifusion. Okay, so it really just basically the essence of the agreement is it's really that the city would enter into a four-year agreement with Bifusion, where the city would essentially build a build-to-suit facility or building for Bifusion operations at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. The estimated cost for that project is about $2.4 million, which was going to be funded solely out of the Environmental Services Fund. Then the additional or separately is the $1 million over a four-year period. Those are broken down. The initial first three quarters, I think it's stipulated like an amount of $82,000 for the, I can't remember this, there's a specific figure in that around $80,000 for the first three initial payments. And then every other quarter is gonna be around $60,000 until we reach essentially the four-year period. So that's, in essence, that's really what the agreement calls for. And so the way it's supposed to work is that we, the city, will continue to pick up all the plastics coming in from the Ward 6 office, from Fire Station 15, and for Ward 4, and also we'll deploy an additional location once the facility is up and running at Los Reales. So that's really where we collect it. We would essentially bring it to this facility, get a process, and then at the end of the day, Bifusion would market essentially those products locally and everywhere else. And the city will have really the opportunity to capture about 10% of those blocks at a cost of $3. So in a way, what the city's trying to do is really recoup some of the investment that the city's making on this venture. But also the policymakers essentially consider this as we pay Republic Services for a service to recycle our products. We need to invest, and we need to do the same thing related to this program. So that's the essence of the agreement. And I provided to you what the council has seen, what the public has seen, and really where we're at so far. Since then, though, there has been a little change we're in the process of possibly amending. Again, and what I mean possibly amending is it has to go back to the council for consideration and approval. So while we were going through essentially the pre-development stages of building the facility Los Reales, we realized that one, is going to take a lot of time really to get power to that facility, equip it really to the tune of what they're looking for, three-phase power. And so, and that a lot of those lead time items are still going to, for the electrical components, are going to be anywhere between 6 to 9 months. So Council Member Vice Mayor Kasachik got concerned and says, hey, can we look at other sites, other alternatives? And so he was able to locate a facility that is going to be vacated by the University of Arizona, by the end of this month, which is located at 315 South Plummer. And that's really where the U of A operates their transit system, their internal transit system for students. So he toured the facility. We toured the facility. It's not just us, environmental services staff, but also general services staff, really to look at what improvements need to be made to that facility, really to accommodate the needs of Bifusion. And would that really get us much closer in terms of really getting them up and running, the sooner the better? It turns out, at least at this moment, that there is no significant change in terms of schedule gains by us moving into the Plummer site. What it does, though, gives us it would be at a place where it would be more centrally located for essentially not only being in another collection site, but also being more centrally located. It sits on about 4 acres, and that really gives Bifusion and the city the possibility either to expand or use the facility for some other purposes. Mm-hmm. So when so that's what's on the table. It's still going to require some lease payments. I think they're around, I can't remember the figure, but that's still being negotiated. So, all I remember this moment is really the difference in terms of really what we think we're going to spend on the Plummer site versus what we were programmed to spend at the Los Reales site. So what we are projected to spend on the Plummer site is about $1.9 million versus $2.4 of building a facility at Los Reales. So what is that really 1.9 encompass over a 5-year period? It really encompasses the lease payments. It encompasses about $1.2 million worth of tenant improvements. The owner or the landlord will give the city a credit or will contribute about $250,000 towards the tenant improvements. So in a way, the city will be responsible to make those tenant improvements to the tune of $950,000. And then also the landlord will allow the city to operate that facility rent-free for the first 7 months. So that's really where we're at right now. It does have, the lease does have a cost escalator. I think they ended up agreeing at about 3%. So all this stuff is being assembled as we speak, is being negotiated, is being put into place for the council's consideration as part of their August 22nd meeting. So that's where we're at right now. So what I described to you earlier was really what was the agreement, the original agreement, the premises of that agreement. And now essentially what I described to you is really the amendment or transition ourselves to a not building a building at Los Reales, essentially leasing a space at the Plummer site, making some tenant improvements. Difference cost-wise is there's not that significant change. There is some savings, projected savings to the tune of about $500,000, not a whole lot of significant savings in terms of time and schedule, but it does really essentially gives us the ability not only to use that facility for Bifusion, lease that space for initially for 5 years, with the opportunity to extend the lease terms for an additional 2 5-year extensions, and that is all being built into the proposed lease agreement. So that's where we're at, and I'll, again, it's all in the confines of really the city's efforts on really putting this program into play as quickly as possible, really begin to probably in the plumber side, probably gives Bifusion more of an ability really to maybe showcase a lot of the other products, maybe gives or their other ways on how the product could be used. So there's other stuff that could be looked at that side rather than operating in a confined area, even though Los Reales is not confined, but in terms of really the area that we had designated for them to operate, and plus commingling landfill operations with the processing of the non-recyclable plastics would have been a little bit confusing. So it does give us some advantages on that, and that's what's being that will be considered as part of the mayor and council agenda on the August 22nd meeting. So I don't know if there's any particular questions or comments or anything that I may be able to try to answer.
Any questions, Mike?
Sorry, I had my mute on. So Carlos had a couple things. On the communication you sent us, it says that that there's four designated recycling sites, but there's actually only three that are listed. So why are they saying there's four if there's only three?
So there's in reality there should have been a fourth site, and it's really on it's the onus is on us because we haven't really deployed a dumpster or roll off for the non-recyclable plastics at Los Reales. And the reason why, well, we haven't done that. We need to do that. And it really was a delay more internally us and working on the logistics on painting the roll off and stuff like that. But ultimately that the idea, whether Bifusion stays at Los or whether Bifusion operates at Los Reales or not, there's going to be a roll off just dedicated for the non-recyclable plastics for Los Reales.
I understand that, but it should have been more clear in that thing.
It actually,
Margo,
I could just interrupt a minute. It actually, if you read it, I read it several times because it bothered me a great deal. It says four neighborhood recycling centers.
Yep.
Are those the neighborhood recycling centers we have currently going?
That's correct.
But so, they're not
listed. Yes. Four plus three.
Which but there's is, only three listed. Is
well,
what's
but the neighborhood recycling centers are not listed, but it's named. And those are the ones that we have out in general where people can bring other kinds of stuff, right? We haven't closed all those down completely.
They're not. They're still at, right. That is correct. So that's what gets confusing. So what we are not deploying the non-recyclable plastics to essentially, we're deploying the non-recyclable plastics to existing neighborhood recycling centers, and that is plus Fire Station 15, that is Los Reales being one of them, and essentially Ward 4, which is also an NRC today, okay?
Uh-huh. So nothing on the southwest side of town?
Not at the moment, no. So on the southwest side is Fire Station 15.
And it hasn't been. That's my concern.
So there is a site at Fire Station 15, which is on Mission and 29th Street. So there is one serving that area.
That's Midtown.
So
for me, that's Midtown.
That's Midtown. So there are then the three additional ones that are named, which is Fire Station 15.
No, that's not additional. Those are already existing.
Right. So
what probably we've lost is Ward 4. But you're saying that's actually a neighborhood recycling center.
So maybe I'm confusing the subject. Okay, so what I meant to say was we have existing recycling centers. Okay, and then four. And we're basically within those four, we're going to deploy essentially those non-recyclable plastics. So they're deployed at Ward 4. They're deployed at Fire Station 15. And they're deployed at Los, they should be deployed or could be, or needs to be deployed to Los Reales. Okay.
You mean Ward 6, not
Ward 6. No. It's Ward 4 has a non-recyclable plastics roll-off at their site.
Listed in the materials.
No.
It only has Ward 6. I'll read you the paragraph. The city will provide bins designated for non-recyclable waste plastic at its 4 neighborhood recycling centers and will provide designated collection bins at Fire Station 15, Los Reales, and Ward 6.
So
that's what the city manager said.
Right. Okay. So looking at that, that was essentially the intent. Okay. The intent, or what I meant to say on that memo is, eventually, ultimately, okay, those neighborhood recycling centers will also going to be equipped with a non-recyclable plastic roll-off, okay? And then the extra one that is not an NRC, that it's basically is going to be continue to be a drop-off location, would be the Ward 6 location. So those will be the 5 sites where that essentially a non-recyclable plastic will be deployed, and possibly potentially the one at the plumber site. So okay, I'm hoping that I'm hoping that if they're so close, we're hoping that one remains and the other one doesn't become to be another drop-off site. But again, that's something that hasn't really been decided or discussed.
So I have another question for you, Carlos, regarding this. Is okay, so the city is saying, all right, ESGS, we have to pay the $2.4 million. I'm just going to use that number. The $2.4 million to build this building, and you're going to pay $85,000 a month to this company, if I'm reading it right, for them to recycle our materials. But if it's the city's responsibility, or I mean the city's telling us to do it, they should kick in some money. I understand, yes, if we're already paying, you know, Republic, what's the difference in cost? You know, what are we paying versus what's the cost savings, if there is any? You know, I understand the city wants to do the right thing and do the recycle thing. I get that. I understand that. But at what cost? ESGS is not a bottomless pit of money that every time the city gets a, you know, wild burr and they want to put in a program, ESG has got to eat it. And that's my concern.
Okay. So I think we talked about it broadly in terms of the different costs that we experience. So roughly for landfill and cost, it's about $25 a ton. Okay. Plus and minus. When you look at recycling, cost per ton is about $100 per ton. Okay. So when you look at essentially, and again, we're still looking at the numbers, considering what we're basically paying to pick up the container, service the non-recyclable plastics, what we charge for baling, what we basically, the cost is to ship the materials to get processed in California until BioFusion sets up operation here. So that cost, the estimated cost per ton, is about $400 to $450 per ton. So when you look at what it is, so that's the scale that we're looking at that. And then overall, when you look at what is really the cost, it's about $100,000 in tipping fees for related, or the processing fee related to this, to the plastic. So even though the scale and the cost per ton is significantly higher, okay, or it's significantly higher compared to landfill gas, compared to landfilling the product, to recycling, and then you look at processing the non-recyclable plastics, that's basically a significant change going from 25 to 100 to almost $500. But the tonnages are very small. So in scale, even though the cost per ton is high, the tonnage doesn't really amount to a whole lot. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's a fiscal impact. And yes, we have to start looking at that and putting that into perspective. Right. So yeah, that's part of the discussion moving forward. And I think as we have discussed is, when we look at the rate setting that was essentially approved last year, And we will look at really the implementation of the next rate adjustment, which is programmed for this January. That is really just enough funds really to start looking at creating some, not only paying our bills, getting us into more of a financial stability, but also really give us a little bit of flexibility to start working on this pilot, start getting an idea on those programs. But that doesn't mean that there's enough funding really for us to start projecting. If we start moving in all this stuff and start considering all those things, we're going to have to make some investments on that. And yes, certainly to your point, that is not factoring into our current rates and needs to be considered as we move forward and we solidify these arrangements and these programs. Yeah, there's going to be the need to infuse some additional revenue to offset those expenses. But
right. And mm-hmm. And I understand what you're saying, Carlos, but I'm going to go back to the same question I'm asking. Why is the city saying you're going to do this without even having the discussion of the costs and that we're going to be eating the money without them kicking in some of it, you know, along the way? They already knew it was going to cost money. I'm sure you gave them numbers. So, you know, that's my concern is the city thinks they have carte blanche with ESGS money. We're an enterprise fund. We're self-supporting. We based on the, you know, income we get from the ratepayers. And I don't think it's fair to ratepayers to have to pay even more because the city keeps throwing more projects at us that we didn't plan on, we didn't budget on, you know, and it's not fair to, and that's where I'm coming from.
So we need to push back. Sure. So I think part of the other equation is really the way it's being looked at from a policy perspective is we got to pitch in a little bit to allow for some of these companies to settle into Tucson. Okay, so what they shared with what Bifusion shared with us was we're asking for some help to facilitate us moving into Tucson. Our operating cost, and they share that with us, is about to be able to run that operation and process that many tons, it's about $3.3 million, okay? Yeah, there's, and did we dive into their pro forma in terms of how much are there, what are the sales gonna look like after they settle here? We did not get into those discussions, but we know that the right off the bat was and again, you're in a very new market, that I think that's where the city felt that we needed to infuse those dollars, that amount, to be able to get them situated here. So I
Okay. Any other questions for Carlos? Margo?
Okay, I'm concerned about the plumber site. Who are the neighbors around the plumber site? And what I'm thinking is, what are they going to say about all these big trucks bringing in load offs, dropping them off, the clanging noise that results in? Has there been any neighborhood meeting with the people around the plumber site?
Ms. Margo, no, not from our end. I'm not sure if the Ward 6 office has done that. I think we have taken up maybe a very passive approach on that. And we have just really allowed really for Vice Mayor Kosacek really to take the lead and really moving that forward. So no, we have not had any meetings. All that I know is all that property around that is zoned industrial. So we looked from a zoning perspective, and I think we're covered, with the exception on the southern end, there's a portions of the parcel that abut resident R2 zoning. Mm-hmm. And I think the only restrictions that would be required there would be just some screening or really eliminating the need to store some materials within 50 feet of that boundary. So that's about it. I think most of that, there's a lot of buildings that are that TUSD operates. And I think the impact in terms of buses, traffic, freight, stuff like that going in and out of that area will not be significantly different than what is occurring today.
Okay, that's a good answer. I think there's also a park in that area. I'm going to have to drive down and check it out. But
a little bit south. Yeah, there's a park south of that. Yes, that's correct.
So I'm just trying to envision, you know, the political fallout that could come from that. I mean, I personally think it's a great place to have it when it cuts down on transportation all the way to Los Reales. On the other hand, it really knocks at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus site, where for the first time you were going to bring in companies that had the opportunity to reuse the material. So it's kind of like picking that first plum off and not having it be part of the campus that you've been mm-hmm. pushing so hard for and that the city as a whole has been pushing for. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a disappointment, but personally, I think I don't know quite how the city, you know, the distances. I'm sure there's a map that could figure out what the comparative cost will be for all that transportation, because it's not just the cost, it's the air pollution that goes along with the continuing trucks that are running up and down the street.
Some of the plastic bricks. Have you guys figured out what that is worth to the city?
There's a price on them, $3 a piece.
Right, that's correct.
Materials.
That's it. That's all. Okay. I mean, that's part of the package deal, but.
What? And what's the market like? If the city's taking 10%, what is the other 90% going to, or what are they thinking?
Trevor, quite frankly, we have not really got into that side of the equation. And quite frankly, it has been that a discussion from our end really to better understand how we can support the program and the process moving forward. Is really to better understand BioFusion's business model. Is it more on selling the technology to be able to produce mm-hmm. these types of blocks, or is it really on the sale of the materials, or is it a combination of both? But typically, those types of setup are not commonly seen. That you are essentially the technology developer, and yet at the same time you are in the commodity business of selling the end product that is produced out of your systems, out of your product. So that's something that we maybe is because it's so early in the stages, I maybe that needs to be determined. I couldn't answer that question because we don't know that.
Okay. Fred, did you have something you wanted to ask?
Well, I just wanted to add that the park that you guys are thinking about is not really a park. The university's track and field area is right to south of the location, and right next to that is a soccer field. So they used to be like a grass area, and I guess it was used as a park, but it's mostly the university's owned facilities now.
Do we know why the university is giving it up?
I do know. The university is moving their Caltrain operation closer to campus. So rather than being, it's probably only a half mile, maybe a mile from campus, the current site, but the new site will be directly south of campus. So right across the street from the ENR2 building, so right along 6th Street, sort of close to the bike shop, whose name I'm forgetting, and it's on property that we already own, so it's a cost-saving aspect or a cost-saving move by the university because it's closer. It doesn't cost us any money because we already own the property. It's just a matter of putting in the improvements to ensure that they're safe and can get in and out and all that.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to make a comment about the locations for the collection centers. I didn't see anything on the list that's on the east side of town. So just wanted to suggest that they consider the Udall Park. We have a purple bin for the glass there. So it might be nice to maybe set something up there for the plastic also.
Okay. Are you, Carlos, is anyone talking about an east side spot?
So one of the things that, as you know, we collapsed essentially the Ward 2. So first we collapsed Udall Center because of the amount of contamination and how much it was really detracting really from the use of that park. That's when we moved that operation to the Ward 2 offices, which continue to really be plagued with a lot of issues and a lot of complaints for the neighborhoods and also contamination. So what we are planning is really moving forward once the new Ward 2 offices is relocated from its current location to the southwest corner of Broadway and Pantano, that will set up essentially another neighborhood recycling center on that, which will be equipped with essentially a plastic roll-off for non-recyclable plastics. So that's I don't think Udall will be a location, but certainly that Ward 2 office will be a proposed location.
It's Broadway and Pantano that they're moving
to? Yes.
Yeah, it's actually, so it's a huge
building commonly known as East Center East facility. Yes.
Yeah.
The ward is not really certain as to what they want to do with it because it's much bigger than they have right now. They're anticipating using the place for police to set up a small center there so that they could work out of that facility, as opposed to being further southwest or southeast rather, where they're currently housed. And the ward is trying to find other departments to use the facility because, like I said, it's the place huge. Is huge. Yeah. And I know that Councilman Cunningham is really enthusiastic about creating the possibility of using that as a site for recycling as well.
Good. So that's to be continued.
it turned out to be a big, huge land swap deal from where the ward office is currently. There's a school that they wanted the precinct facility, and so they one of the people from the representing the schools is in real estate somehow, and he had that property on Broadway and Pantano, and they initiated a swap just one for one with the city because they want that. The city has property now to use that to expand their needs, their facility. They're gonna have to deal with having the fire department there because they can't be moved. But it's supposed to be a great deal.
Good.
The city's giving up the current East Side City Hall. Is that what you're telling me?
They're gonna. It's a direct land swap from where they are now on Speedway between mm-hmm. Penn.
I know, it used to be my office up there.
Okay, well.
And so it's moving down to Broadway and Pantano.
Yes, and it's a much bigger facility. And you know, there's even talk about expanding, and I don't know if the county would want to do this or not, but because the county has facilities on Broadway and Cole, which are pretty old and they're really small. And so there's talk about having them also move into that facility because they have so much room there.
Well, that's good. Well, that's nice to know since the other ward office was so small for meetings and everything. So
yeah, it wasn't set up well.
Okay. Any more questions about Bifusion? If
can
not,
I ask a question about the Los Reales Sustainability Campus, or would you like me to do it somewhere else?
Is it connected to the Bifusion?
No.
Okay. We might have to. Is this going to be a long discussion? Because
I don't know. I just wanted to ask about a newspaper article that recently came out about the sustainability campus and
okay,
and waste energy.
Carlos, do you have enough time to answer that, or should we do that for the next meeting?
Your preference. I take your lead, so I can answer the question.
Yeah, because we're still got to get to the finance.
Okay.
Stuff. Right, let's
put it on for the next time.
Okay. All right. Okay. And next, Carlos, the HHW program update.
So Brittany is going to share her screen with the PowerPoint, just providing an overview of the program. Thank you. Okay, so do you mind moving into the next slide, Brittany, please? So I know all of you know this stuff, and I hate to repeat myself on constantly, but this is really just, again, want to start from the basics and just kind of walk us through to where we're at right now. So the program is really intended to collect household, and I mean household hazardous waste. Okay, it's really just your batteries, your paint, your fertilizers, your chemicals that you only use a portion of it, and instead of really them going into the garbage itself or just putting them in your drain, we can certainly reuse some of those products and really get into a much, much beneficial use. And really, and if there is really no use, really for us to dispose of them properly and not really going into the regular waste stream, even though that's what the city invested over $7.7 million on a new line cell. That is all the chemicals that are essentially considered to be household hazardous waste can certainly be contained or be essentially detained or collected by the liner that any new landfills is required to have. So it is a free program. So you can go to Los Reales, that's where the site is located, and it basically is free of charge as long as you can demonstrate to us whether you bring your ID, you bring a utility bill to say that you are basically a city resident. And if you are not, then essentially the city assess a $10 fee for non-city customers. So kind of giving you a little bit more background, probably 15 years or longer, this program used to be managed by Pima County. And Pima County was the one that essentially was running the program in its entirety. That time there was no cost for either county or city residents. Then the county said, at that time, the county said, we're going to collapse the program. The city said, you know what, we don't want you to do that. Why don't we essentially allow us really to transition the program to us, not only transfer the programs, the assets, but also included employees. And so since then, we said, well, we gotta continue with the program, but there is not going to have to be a fee because now it's going to be fee-based out of the city, and we got to really charge essentially non-city residents a cost for this service. So, and that fee is essentially is $10 for non-city residents. Again, you can drop off your materials at the Los Reales Sustainability Campus Thursday, Friday, and Saturday from 7 to 2 p.m. We are closed the second Saturday of every month. And so one of the things that we have done is we used to host one single HHW event on the east side every month. So very popular, had a lot of customers going to that site. But we basically, for the past 2 to 3 years, we basically transitioned that to a monthly drop-off event. Again, that's still being held every second Saturday of the month. but it's not just only to collect HSW materials, but also we added the ability for folks to come in and shred and bring some of their paper to be shredded. Other places were probably or other ideas is we're getting a good amount of mulch and compost at the Los Reales campus. So we're thinking that we're probably going to bag some of the material, make it available to the public. So when you come and drop off essentially your HSW materials, you can certainly take a bag or two of that material for free. So those are the things we're trying to incorporate that into those events. But again, instead of really just being in one single location, now we essentially are going to virtually every ward, every sector of the city, and touching virtually every quadrant of the city. So when you look at essentially what do we collect is really just the list of goes from engine oil filters all the way to cooking oil, cleaning supplies, batteries. And we still got a few events essentially this year. We actually have one coming up this coming weekend at the Pima College West Campus. So, and again, we go from the West Side to Midtown to the East Side and to various, and the North Side. So that way everybody has an opportunity really to participate into the program closer to essentially to their homes and not having to drive to one single location. So that's where how we have transitioned the program from the county to the city, operating at essentially on the where the county used to operate this facility at Sweetwater and I-10, kind of in the northwest side of town, to the city essentially taking over that facility and then essentially transitioning that facility or abandoning that facility and moving that facility to the Los Reales Sustainability Campus. Next slide, Brittany, please. So what we don't collect is really any commercial waste. We do have a separate program where commercial customers can come in and make arrangements with us, set up an appointment, that we essentially look at the materials that they want to, that they need to dispose of. There is a specific fee or charge for that. That has to be evaluated. It has to be done by appointment. But but it's not really virtually available to every single commercial customer. But there are some parameters on that associated with that. So that's what are some of the things we don't take in any ammunition, explosives, no medical waste. But a lot of times we end up handling a lot of that stuff into our stream, because at the end of the day, some folks are very clever and essentially bring in some of the stuff that they shouldn't be having. But very, very often we see ammunition. Very often we see a lot of the gas cylinders. There's a lot of stuff that comes in our way that really shouldn't be going into that program. Next slide, please.
You take mercury, don't you?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you look at kind of in the recent history for the past 3 years, we're able to see in terms of really the different places we have been, the different locations, how many customers have visited us each time, and you'll see that the East Side Service Center still is a very, very popular site and a very popular location. So. Once the Ward 2 office gets relocated to the other location, then we're hoping to keep those numbers because it again is a very popular location at the Ward 2 office. So we're hoping that will be the case. So overall, we did take a peek back in 2021, and I think we're going to be around the same numbers as we have been in 22 and 23. But obviously there's quite a bit of participation and mostly on the Midtown, East Side, we see that we see a lot of participation on that. Not a whole lot. We're seeing that on the Southwest quadrant of the city. We're seeing pickup in terms of the west side a little bit, more the northwest. But we're just going to continue to really advertise, continue to make it available, and really just make sure that our services are equitably distributed. We're going to continue essentially being at those places, even though we, in some areas, we may have a much greater participation than others. We're just going to continue with that to make sure that we're accessible at every location. So on the right, you'll see really where the participation comes in terms of how many of really are city customers or non-city customers. Still, the vast majority of who we serve are city customers. We do see, continue to see a lot of county customers. I would say a third of those would be county customers. We do assess essentially the $10 fee. Sometimes it gets hairy because we get a lot of customers that may be out of the county, which delays the line, but we just continue to do that. So again, on average, we're talking about 4,000 to 4,800 to about 5,000 customers a year that essentially take advantage of that program. And you'll see the breakdown per customer out there as well. Okay, next slide. And that just basically pretty much a comparison in terms of the number of residents that we see from the city versus the county throughout, essentially throughout the year. Next one. So temporarily, as you know, we're making some improvements to that facility at Los Reales. We're temporarily set up out virtually on the west side of that facility. We're operating out of that, out of Connexes, and essentially the equipment that we use out of those drop-off locations. But we've been at that for several months, and we're really hoping that these improvements should have been completed over 6 months ago. We are still really experiencing a lot of delays. Unfortunately, the contractor we have not had the best experience lately with him. And so we continue to struggle with that. The contract has failed a few of the steel inspections. Since then, that has been rectified, and we have been able to accept some of that work. The other thing we're facing is delays on equipment deliveries. That's also something that we have been experiencing. But we really are hoping that by the end of this year, that facility should be operational. Again, it should. And that's what we're hoping, we're shooting for, it's really for that to be fully operational. And it's not really so much about you coming in and dropping off your materials, but it's really the ability of to staff really to process those materials, separate them essentially properly, and be able to store them. And that's what you see on the slide, on the left slide, you'll see those bunkers that essentially they're explosion proof, vapor proof. So that way, once the material is essentially segregated and is separated, that it's essentially stored and ultimately will be shipped out to the appropriate end user of that product. So again, it's not only the collection, the processing, the storage, and ultimately disposal of that of those products. Next one, I think we're done. I think that was the last part. So again, very, very high level, continue to kind of learn from transitioning from just being in one location to several locations and really just waiting really for us to have an improved site at Los Reales and really be in a much better opportunity really to serve our customers, but also have the ability as they swing by to see if there's some products that they may be able to use so they can take it home, find a benefit to use out of that, and continue with the program. And again, being more available in the various neighborhoods throughout the city in those collection points, collection days.
Are there any questions, Margo? What? You're muted.
I was coughing. I didn't think you wanted to hear that. I think it's really been terrific you're moving around, and I'm blanking on her name, but I think she's done.
Christina. Christina.
No, the person who's in charge of HHW. She's done a terrific job in setting up this processes and getting these things going. And she's had several positions in the department, and she's taken over this a couple of years ago. And I just think the way it's grown and it feels so much more a part of the city, of the city process and the ability of people all out throughout the city to bring their household hazardous waste. And I suspect part of the problem with the Southwest is the nature of people, a lot of turnover, that it's hard to get that information out and let people know about that. I did want to ask about how often is the material shipped out, whether you know how long is it stored, because obviously the goal is not to store it on site, but to temporarily store it until it can be moved on.
So it varies. It varies by type. It varies really by how far do we need to get it delivered, because each product may be, you may want to consider a chemical that maybe a gallon of that really begins to be very hazardous, and we want to get rid of it as soon as we can. Same thing could apply with mercury, as compared to really having basically bullets or ammunition that we may be able to store until we are able to make it a full pallet. So it varies. I don't have that schedule, but it really varies based on the material, where it's going, and essentially, and what it takes us really to come up with a full load, and also really looking at it, the sensitivity of the material as well.
There used to be a sort of collection site in Phoenix where people brought things in, communities from around. Are we still sending things there, and then that place, you know, again, it makes a larger mass to be picked up, or do we have trucks coming directly to Los Reales?
Ms. Margo, I'll need to check on that. I don't have an answer for that. So let me check on that. Let me send you a quick note on that. But yeah,
it's not critical. It's just the logistics of disposing of that is really quite complicated, and I guess that's what I was trying to bring out was.
And that's what
it's
we
great
were experiencing.
To collect it, but now what do you do?
Sure.
You have a whole lot of it.
And those are some of the things that we saw when we were transitioning out of the old Sweetwater facility to the new facility, is because cost was a factor in terms of disposing some of the material. So we were storing some of the material. And we said, well, just because we don't want to spend the money really to process that, then we're opening up a can of worms on really making us more vulnerable really to have that type of product. And we just got to make sure that let us get more used to getting the material in, really coming up with a nice manageable load that is still cost effective, but not just because it costs us a whole lot of money to dispose of this product, we're not going to ship it out. So those are some of the things that we learned, and we did spend quite a bit of dollars in the past, I would say year and a half to 2 years, trying to get rid of a lot of the material that we were not pushing out.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, well, thank you, Carlos. That's a good update.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item 4, Maggie, for the financial monthly report.
Hi, good afternoon. I just, let me apologize in advance. I'm actually been offsite for 2 days at a conference, and I've had to move around a little bit during Carlos's talking to find a place that was quiet, which I think I have succeeded. But if you hear some background noise, that's why. I'm going to turn off my camera. I have 2 reports to talk to you about today, which Brittany provided to you. The first is where we're at with fiscal year end 2023, which ends on June 30th. The disclaimer there, though, is that it ended on June 30th, but we are still processing fiscal year 23 transactions, and we will be doing so through the end of this month. It takes EGSD, we process a large number of transactions, a lot of expenditures, and it does really just take us that long to get all the bills paid and all the receivables booked and all of those things. So these numbers, I did indicate that for 2023 at the top. Let me just share my screen. Give me a moment here. Brittany, I think that you disabled sharing. Is that right? Do you want to share the 2023?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and share it. I think it's something that the IT disabled because
this I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
So first the 2023?
Yeah, let's start with that one. And then I could stop and pause for questions. And then we can move on to 24, which of course we just barely have 1 month under our belt. July closed today. So let's start with 2023. Okay, thanks, Brittany. Now I just have this notification. Okay. So if you, again, this report, we start at the top with the revenues. If we look in the third column, we have the FY 2023 actuals, which for the year so far, we're at $59.7 million. And I really suspect that's not going to change much. We have booked all the revenues for the collections related to residential and commercial. The only changes we might have is we'll receive some rebates for compressed natural gas, a few things like that. So this number could go up slightly, but probably not likely to the tune of $1 million. So we're at $59.7 million, which you can see is just north of $6 million higher than what was budgeted. We had budgeted $5.3 million for the year. Some of the notable variances in the revenue section is $3.1 million more collected for residential charges and $2.7 million more in the landfill, the landfill service charge. And then we also, which we've discussed a few times, is the $1.2 million that was a transfer out to the risk insurance fund for an adjustment that we didn't expect this year. So that was a transfer out, so a reduction to the enterprise funds revenues for the year. In terms of the expenditures, we had $6.17 million in expenditures. And again, that number will change. That number will definitely change as we get into the end of August. We are still processing. Those are the, that's the bulk of the transactions that we're still processing, not the salaries and wages, but the contractual services. As much as we ask our suppliers to get their bills in quickly, we do get surprise bills and we're getting them every day that need to get processed into the financial system. The salaries really, we're done with salaries for fiscal year 23. So that is not likely to change at all. So some of our big variances in the expenditure areas, we had for capital outlay, $6.2 million. Budgeted and $3.4 million was actually spent. In capital projects, we had $13.8 million budgeted and $6.7 million was spent. So those are our largest variances. And then we did have north of $1 million in savings in the salaries and benefits for fiscal year end 24. So you can see when you look in the fiscal year end 2023 column, where we have $59 million in revenues and then $61.7 million in expenditures. That means that our expenditures exceeded our revenues by $1.9 million. Thank you, Brittany, for the pointer. I appreciate that. Which is an improvement over how it was budgeted originally. The budget, you can see just to the left, we were thinking the budget was built with a $16.5 million deficit, and you can see that the year rounded out in a much stronger position than the budget originally reflected. Is there any questions regarding fiscal year end 24 that I can answer, or maybe something that might need some research and I can get back to the group afterwards, some specific questions?
My only question would be is, since we haven't had financials, you know, detailed financials in a couple of years, it seems like, would we be able to get the breakdown, you know, like we used to get with the codes and stuff?
Yes. Brittany mentioned to me that after I got off the meeting last time that you had asked for a detailed report. And my plan was to ask you about that today, just so I can, because of course, this is my third month here. So I wanted to make sure that I understood exactly what you were looking for what you had seen in the past. Brittany and I did look in the files a little bit, but would you like to see it down to the actual spend category level? And would you like to see it for the whole enterprise fund, or would you like to see it broken down in each of the different areas, for example, residential, and then it would be salaries and contractual and commodities underneath that? Would you like to see it at that level?
Well, I don't think we have to have we don't have to have broken down, micro broken down, but definitely by the subcategories, you know, so we can see where we've overspent or underspent.
Mm-hmm. When you say subcategories, just so I'm sure I understand, do you mean by the types of services or by the types of spend categories?
Well, I mean, Brittany, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't you have a copy of the old reports we used to get?
Yes, I can forward one to her. And
that would be great, because I think that's what I'm looking for, because it gives me, you know, a general idea how much we spent. You know, we spent this much on wages, but there were other categories within that, and same with commodities and same with contractual services, things like that, where okay. It was broken down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'll take a look at what Brittany sends me, and then I can send you a report. And then if that doesn't work, or there's a different way you'd like to see it sliced and diced or rolled up, just let me know and we'll get something together. And I'm assuming that you're referring to the fiscal year that just ended. Is that where you'd like to see the details?
That's correct. Sure. And, you know, if we don't get it till, you know, after you finish posting stuff, that's fine.
I can send it to you just with the, and then we can send you a final once we have things wrapped up for the year. And that at least it's unlikely to change very much, and definitely not materially. So I think, and it won't, our new workday system generates reports like that very easily. So it won't be difficult for me to pull that together, but it'll likely be the beginning of next week that I send that out to the committee.
Maggie, also I'm trying to set up the finance subcommittee meeting with Brittany, and that's actually where we really do go through all the detail.
Okay. Is that a meeting that you like for me to attend?
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay. Yep. Happy to. And then I'll be sure that we have the report before that so you can review it in advance.
Perfect, because we haven't had one of those for a year. Couple years.
Question.
Yes.
In the contractual service expenditures, does that include contracts within the city? So in other words, what I'm looking for is, where is it shown all the maintenance on our trucks, the new tires, all that kind of costs?
That will appear in the contractual services. A lot of the maintenance is done by the City of Tucson's fleet services.
Right.
And then there are charges for that from fleet. And then we have other contractual services, for example, a company that washes the trash trucks, those kinds of things. And those will fall under there. That's right, Ms. Garcia.
Okay. and then the tires would come under commodities?
I think the tires would likely come under the charges from fleet services.
Okay.
Yes, they provide us by vehicle usually. It'll have parts and maintenance.
And any other questions?
The other was the capital outlay. Obviously, the fact that there's 7 million and 2 million. Well, the project 7 million just means that we haven't done those projects, and that 7 million will move forward into the next fiscal year to support the projects that are online or, you know, in the queue to get done.
Generally speaking, just in terms of budget authority, it's sort of a lose it or use it type thing. But then new budget authority is built into the subsequent fiscal year for the projects that are ongoing. All of the projects that are under environmental services right now, for example, the remodel project of Building 6 at our facility on Park and Ajo is one of them. None of those were completed in the fiscal year. And again, Carlos was speaking to some of the delays they're experiencing out at the Los Reales landfill when he covered the household hazardous waste program. There's been supply chain delays and then other delays, but there is sufficient budget authority in fiscal year 24 to cover to wrap those projects up and then to cover anything new that would be planned in the current fiscal year, meaning the one that started July 1st. But that 7 million, that's a savings. That sort of stays with fiscal year 23, and then we roll over into the new budget for 24, which is actually 13.8 million for capital projects for fiscal year 24. So a little bit, very close to what was budgeted in fiscal year 23. And we can move on to looking at fiscal year 24 if the committee is ready. Okay. Yes. Thanks, Brittany. So these numbers are reflective. I believe I pulled them about a little over a week ago. July does not close until the 10th today. So this is most of July, but not all of it so far. And so you can see that we have $3.6 million in revenues that have been collected so far, mostly in the top area there, the residential commercial landfill, and that there's $67.7 million budgeted for fiscal year 24 for anticipated revenues collected. Thank you, Brittany. And if we scroll down to the expenditures, the $1.3 million, that is definitely not reflective of a month's worth of activity for a budget, our budget this size. This is probably one payroll and certainly not all of the invoices. When we have activity from our suppliers in July, it generally takes them into August to get us the bills and for us to book them. So this is a pretty low number. This is not going to be reflective of all of July at all. And then again, you can see that we have $67,174,252 budgeted for our budget authority for expenditures for this fiscal year. $21 million for salaries, wages, and benefits, $3.8 million for commodities, $26 million for contractual services, and then the capital projects, $13.8 million, and debt service, $984,000. That's for the principal, and then the interest is $258,000 is what's budgeted. And again, these are very preliminary numbers, and And we can take a look again next month and see where we're at. And we should have a good month under our belt by then.
How much debt do we actually have? And is it in COPS or in bonds or what?
That is a great question. And I like to get back to the committee on that, just so I'm sure to provide the actual. And if I may, Ms. Garcia, I'll just provide that information to you as of June 30th, if that works for you. Okay.
That's fine. Yeah. I'm just curious because there was a time when we tried very hard to get out completely from any kind of debt. And so obviously we didn't succeed because here we are showing carrying some debt. So I guess that's why I was curious. The ESAC a couple of years ago had really been pushing that as a management strategy.
I'll definitely provide that information to you.
Any other questions for Maggie?
Nice report.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
And easy to read.
You're well done.
Thank you. Yes.
Good. Thanks very much.
All right. Let's move on to item five for the subcommittee reports. And Trevor is going to be helping out and doing the waste diversion collections and education report. Thanks.
I am indeed. Thank you. I will be the one giving updates for our subcommittee for the foreseeable future until Fred or somebody else wants to step up. Within that, we started off with some University of Arizona sustainability updates on how our move out efforts went, and I should have those numbers pulled up. The core sort of summary of where we're at in terms of move out numbers were overall we were down compared to last year. One second, and I will pull up all of those numbers. Numbers. Here we go. From move out for May of this year, we worked with Suburban Miners as a reminder. They collected approximately 51,000 pounds of material, and that was 2 tons less than last year. They also picked up an additional 6,500 pounds.
Trevor, you're cutting out a little bit.
Yep, I see
that. Okay. We've lost you. Okay. He's going to come back. Brittany, do you have to let him back in?
I guess I'll let him back in.
Okay. Please do.
I was going to say, I think he purposely did that to get himself off the hook.
I was wondering.
It's his first report.
Hey, and if anybody would like to join that subcommittee and be chair, you'd be quite welcome. Margot, you're hard to replace.
Well, for now, I'll share the MRF report just so we have something to look at. And he hasn't popped or requested to
come in.
Not yet. So, oh, there he is.
I'm wondering if it had to do with when he was trying to get his numbers.
Yeah, he was working on his sustainability campus report.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you guys hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
My computer just kind of stopped working. Wasn't even Zoom. Where did we cut off?
Well, you're still talking about the U of A and okay. Your final numbers and how it's down.
Okay, perfect. So we did have Suburban Miners collected about 51,000 pounds of material, 2 tons less than last year. They also collected about 6,500 pounds of abandoned property in June, which is basically just what students might leave behind after they move out. So in total, Suburban Miners captured 57,500 pounds of material. The Office of Sustainability, working with the University of Arizona Campus Pantry, collected about 1,665 pounds of food that was then able to go out to University of Arizona folks. That's about half of what was collected last year. University of Arizona Surplus Department had the entirety of the Honors Village, which is the largest dorm on campus, and they didn't weigh their items. But did note that they had some difficulties, just overall felt like they captured less than last year. And then overall diversion numbers, we collected about 155,000 pounds of trash, or right around 77 tons, a little more than that. And the overall diversion rate with everything that we did divert was 28%. We also had a pretty productive conversation about what some of the maybe perceived issues were in terms of why numbers were down and things that we might be able to go back and chat with folks that are really the primary drivers of these efforts, but communications and the need for more communications at really all points in the chain was a pretty consistent point of conversation, and is something that I'll be talking with my colleagues in Housing and Residential Life about for this next year's move out, which we're already thinking about. After that, we shifted into waste diversion and the MRF report. It was noted that tonnages did drop across the board, but that was really driven by we just had less material going to the MRF for the last month. Prices for some commodities increased, others decreased, and so kind of a wash, but really we saw a decrease in the amount of material, which just meant that we had less, fewer revenues from selling those commodities. We are still waiting on our July bill. They, as of last week, the Friday before, they had just done an audit, and there may have been a drop preliminarily. I'm not sure if we have an update this week, but there may have been a drop in contamination based on an initial look. Last audit, Alyssa, the new staff person under Christina, helped out. There's a new baler at the MRF. There were some hiccups, so it took a lot longer to do the actual audit. There was also a fire, likely because of a flare, which is interesting. We kind of all expected it to be batteries or something, but it took about 4 hours longer than usual to do that audit because of those issues. In collections, we had an update on glass. I think we might be getting an update here, but regardless, we talked about it quite a bit. So the city is meeting with Republic to try to put glass back into curbside recycling. Plan for glass hasn't really come together in terms of what we were trying to do, private haulers and yes, glass report, there we go. Do we wanna talk through that at all, or should I keep talking? Oh, I think you're muted,
Chris? Keep talking.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Yeah, just a little bit, just quickly about going back to the old way.
Yeah. Okay. So private haulers and Republic continued accepting glass and tentatively maybe looking at January to bring it back. They were starting discussions deeper on that last week. SMI Strategic Materials, I believe, is still removing glass, and they are getting better at taking it from the stockpile at Los Reales, but they also use Republic to help recycle things. We've run into lots of challenges at drop-off sites with broken glass ending up on the ground and city staff having to spend time cleaning up areas. We've tried it, piloted it. Hasn't worked quite as well as I think everyone had hoped. And we did talk about how the MRF and workers at the MRF don't ever touch the glass. It goes through the whole system, gets separated automatically, likely by weight. And if it doesn't get separated out, then it'll end up as residue in the trash if that happens. And then Pat was gonna follow up with us to tell us how that glass is actually separated. I was there if we want to chat about the glass report.
That's good. That's fine. And then next, want to go to the Alley and Weeds letter?
Yeah. So updates were made to the Alley and Weeds letter. It was sent to City Hall for review by the PIO, sent to Mayor and Council. It'll get sent to Mayor and Council before it gets sent out in November. Could be in October. They're still figuring out the exact timing. It is a little bit more friendly. We provided some additional potential edits. And the letters currently go to the account holder. And we had a little bit of a discussion about the need to potentially shift to the property owner because they are the ones that are ultimately responsible for ensuring weeds are cleared, alleys are clear, all of that. From there, we went into landfill and compost screening. We have rented a screen to start screening compost last week. All the compost that we've generated since the beginning of the program is going to be piled up into a big pile to screen, and we'll be screening down to a quarter minus or 1 inch minus. Quarter minus is really fine material. And 1 inch minus is more like a topsoil with some coarse material incorporated. All of the finished product has been tested and both are good at nitrogen. It's overall really good looking material. We have about 1,000 tons ready to donate. And as mentioned earlier, getting in the process of getting ready to do that with deliveries to community gardens happening and then looking into some bagging as well to help get it out to community members. We asked about whether or not like landscaping material was being captured from the severe storm we had almost 2 weeks ago now. Last quarter, the landfill did quite a bit of diversion of landscaping material, and we had just finished 970 tons of chipping to use in the composting operation. And so because of that, most of the material that was coming into the sustainability campus was diverted to the landfill instead of to the composting operation. Cell 4B and pond updates. The liner's in, just waiting on the final touches for a treated water pond, which is primarily used for dust control. Also using that water in the compost operation. They are doing a final walk, or they did a final walkthrough last week. Wasn't quite 100% there. There was a need to transfer pumps and some other things, and there were some issues in that transition. And they will not be having a ribbon cutting for the cell and won't have an official opening, but as soon as it's operational, they'll start filling it with material. Public outreach, Zero Waste Award. Some folks got an award from Mayor and Council. There will be an event on November 4th, and a Zero Waste event on November 4th. It will be at the Catalina United Methodist Church. And that's all I noted there. Community services project facilitator. His name is Stephen Lucero, I believe. He just retired as principal from Monzo Elementary. He's working on organizing cleanups and outreach like Earth Day event in April. He will be sending out emails to neighborhood associations to ask that they, invite folks, organize these sorts of things. If anyone knows of folks who want to do informal cleanups, Christina asked that we let her know so they can provide bags and related pickup for material that's collected. And they're starting to look at fall events. They'll be doing landfill tour on Halloween and planning on putting together information for the tree cycle program, hazardous household waste, recycling, brush and bulky, all that stuff that goes out in the fall. And then finally,
we just mention real quick that he's also available for neighborhood associations. So if somebody wants to set up a meeting with him, they'll be glad to come in and explain things.
Yes. And then finally, there, Alyssa, Chris, one of Christina's other new employees, is working on the transition of the website from the old website to the new website, and doing lots of updating there. We had a little bit of a conversation about some missing information, and I went on there and you can sort of request, like, there's blurbs on each page for is something missing? You could request it. So you just fill out a short form and let them know that information is missing. And finally, on code enforcement, we are within the lien foreclosure process. Last time we chatted, the city was embarking on how to get money back for boarding, fencing, demolition, et cetera, associated with what goes into boarding up a house and what all of that entails. Typically, liens are only paid off when the house sells. And the city of Phoenix started a program in 2015. Through their program, they've gotten back several million dollars, and it's something that we're really interested in.
And the emphasis was on the vacant and neglected structures.
Yes.
So,
and really within that. Yeah, within that, after this, if the city has to demolition or demo something, the city really wants to try to get funding money back after that property sells. A lot of properties in this sort of estate remain problems after demolition, so they can be magnets for homeless camps, other sorts of things. Right now, they're working on creating the policy, and once that's ready, that will go to mayor and council, and they'll do some back and forth if it's needed. The process there will rely on some various courts, likely to involve some outside counsel, and likely it becomes a civil matter with the property owner. The process would involve the court issuing a writ and sheriff's office scheduling an auction of the actual sale of that property. It was noted that there is a big backlog at the moment with older liens, some of them going back 20 plus years. And moving forward, they're really trying to get new properties that go through this process to do this a little bit quicker. And they are working with an attorney from the city to help with that process and everything that entails.
And it's going to go to Superior Court instead of getting bogged down in city court.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
Staffing within code enforcement, they're still at 11 inspectors. They are looking into the possibility of hiring on community service officers to help get through the backlog of all of the things that they're dealing with. They're approved for four of those right now. The designation of community service officers is lower salary wise than a code enforcement inspector, but will hopefully they'll be looking at bringing some folks off the current recruitment list to do strictly property maintenance issues. They may also help support some homeless camp needs there. When it comes to homeless camps, the owner needs to initiate a response with Tucson Police Department. They have to post a no trespass letter in order for police to take any action. And then the property owner has to arrange help in terms of cleaning up that property. Hiring, there are a few hiring fairs coming up that they're looking to be a part of. They are having difficulties offering competitive salaries, but they're also running into issues with folks just not being qualified. And so they are looking at whether or not they're asking too much and might be able to revise. And then the new community service officers, those positions that they're looking to hire for, have a lower sort of entry point and might also provide a nice way to get people in, get them some experience, and move them up to that code enforcement inspector level. Police department is also understaffed. They also have higher priorities in a lot of cases than property issues. And it was noted that the new community service officers will wear code enforcement uniforms, not police uniforms. And then we got into future items. So I think that's it.
Good. Thanks, Trevor. That was a lot. That was a long meeting. Appreciate it. Mike, do you want to fill us in on your environmental and engineering meeting?
Sure, but that's a tough act to follow, Trevor.
I felt like I had some big shoes to fill from Margo, so I just
I'm impressed, but mine isn't quite that impressive. But we had our first meeting in a couple of years on June 20th out at the sustainability campus. Fred was there, I was there, Carlos. We had a good meeting. We approved our minutes. Capital improvement plan was discussed. A container maintenance relocation was discussed. Consolidation of welding, vehicle storage, et cetera, being moved from its current location to the Price Service Center, along with possible areas for where things can be placed. The Building 6 remodel at Price Service Center was moving along nicely in June, was supposed to be done by the end of July. I'm not sure if that was completed yet or not, but it was supposed to be by the end of July. Again, same as you, discussions about Cell 4B, the improvements to the HHW facility, which were currently underway but on hold due to permits. Phase one improvements to the entrance area and streets going into the facility and the new development, the landfill gas to energy project, and hopefully everything goes right and ESGS will be able to award a contract before the end of the year. There was a lot of discussion about land swaps for the city of Tucson using portions of the land that ESGS owns for low-income, high-density housing, both at the current container maintenance welding facility at the west side parcel that was cleared for Caterpillar. The discussions about the land swap do not include paying ESGS for the land. So that was never addressed. It just kind of, we never got an answer on that. And these land transfers, it was mentioned that the city needs to pay us for it. If they want to, you know, take our land that we own, they need to pay ESGS for that property because we own it. Let's see, during the landfill discussions, there were looking at land being transferred to the city. However, no discussions about reimbursement for the value of the land at ESGS purchased. And again, I think that has to do with the new facility with the plastics. And I think that's the property. After the meeting, we got a really good tour. We got taken on the, kind of an off-road where they've started building the road where the new development is going in out past the landfill along Highway 10. So we went out that way. We went up into the landfill to look at the new cell, and it was coming on really, really nice. A really good presentation. Frank Bonillas gave us a overview on topics as well. Fred, did I forget anything?
No, can't really say.
So I'm just so trying to see. I hope you took a picture of the cell.
No, I did not.
Darn. Maybe.
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe I did. Maybe I'll have to look on my phone and see.
Okay.
I might have a picture to share. Give me 1 second.
Okay. But it's quite impressive. But it's hard to believe that the one that we all went to,
right,
when it was being built, the old one, is already full. I mean, we just, what was it? A few years ago?
Yeah. And was it four years ago or something?
I think so.
Yeah.
And it's already full. It's incredible.
And when you stand in an empty one.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to see if there's anything else.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to see if there's anything else that I missed here. I'm going through because I did a brief, summary, but I'm trying to see if I made notes. Frank gave us an overview of the Silvercroft.
Oh, yeah.
Wash release site update, Silver Bell landfill remediation, and the Flint oil assessment remediation. So,
okay.
It was a good meeting. Glad we had it.
Good. Thanks. While Brittany's looking for a picture, let's go to item 6 for future agenda items. Anything you want to hear about?
The only thing I'd like to hear about is, the cities come out with their tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 as far as the homeless encampments. And, the city is allowing things to just take place and stagnate and until it gets to a certain level, but ESGS is being tasked with cleaning it all up and getting rid of the refuse and any hazardous waste and that kind of thing. And that's costing us a bunch of money. And it's an added program that the city has added on to us. So what I'd like to see on the future agenda item is, what is this costing ESGS? And because the city keeps throwing these programs at us and they got all these federal dollars, how about giving some of that back to ESGS to help cover these added costs that they keep throwing on us, these extra programs that we didn't budget for.
And they had to hire new people for cleanup.
Exactly. Okay. So if we're having to do something for the city because they're adding new programs,
okay,
which is fine, I get it, but they need to give us money. If they want us to have new programs we didn't budget for, they need to give us the money for it.
Okay, so where's the money? All right. Yep.
All I want to see.
Margo, did you have something you want to add? Can't hear you.
Waste to energy. The Sentinel had an article in their newspaper yesterday about the city economic development office looking for some a federal grant, I guess, of some kind, and they had put waste to energy back in again. The pyrolysis approach that was discussed a couple of years ago, and apparently it showed back up again. And there's been a lot of pushback on waste to energy. We fought it against DM and various other places, and it sort of keeps showing up. And I know Carlos is quoted in here as saying it's not going to happen, but I'd like to hear a little more about who's pushing for this waste to energy. Why does it keep showing up and then the council has to kick it off, show it up, and can we take some sort of stand on the fact that in the overall terms, waste to energy, which is simply taking everything you collect and burning it in some fashion, either under high heat or actual burning it. You know, why does it keep showing up? And one of the things they said that in this article was that the recycling collections would be, curbside recycling would become irrelevant, and you could just dump everything back into the waste again, and they would just burn the whole thing. So
okay, that's
sort of know why it's back up again and who's pushing it and
why won't it go away?
Okay. Why won't it go away?
Okay. All right. Okay. For item seven, there's no call to the audience. I think we're here. We're ready to. Oh, there's the picture. Wow. They don't have all the lining done there.
Yeah, when we were there, it was all done. It's
all lined. It's all done. Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Look at the scale of the humans.
Yes.
The size of the area.
So, this was May 6th. So wow. So it I don't have a recent one, but this is the progress.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's really good.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, we made up for all the times I got you out of this meeting early. So we're going to adjourn at 5:43 and have a good evening, everybody.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.